in all. Listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Happy Friday and welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. In these times when it seems as if the sporting world has ground to a halt, it does give us a chance to reflect what a potentially extremely busy couple of years the calendar might offer once life and sport return to some form of normality. Let's look at athletics and catch up with our regular contributor, the energetic Andy Edwards. Energetic Andy has been having some thoughts about quite a few topics in between sipping a cup of tea or two in his kitchen in North London. First on the list as a talking point, Andy has chosen to discuss whether David Rudisha can make it an unprecedented 3 800-meter gold medals in succession at the now-delayed Tokyo Olympics next year. Remember, VOA sports fans, Rudisha ran what many believe was the greatest 800 ever to win the Olympic title in London in 2012, smashing the world record. Andy, can David Rudisha do it again in Tokyo after winning gold in London and Rio?
He's a great athlete, no doubt about it. But the last race was way back in 2017. Rudisha has been plagued with injuries after so many impressive achievements. Two Olympic golds and breaking the world record with 140.91 in London. But that's all of 8 years ago. And he'd broken the world record first in Berlin on that famous blue track in the Olympic Stadium in August 2010. And then, in the heart of Italy in Rieti, that's another famous track, 1 week later. But David Rudisha is now 31, and he'll turn 32 in what will now be the Olympic year, 2021. And my view is that the odds are against him.
Still in his early 30s, Andy, and Rudisha seemingly has the same strong link with his coaching advisor, Colm O'Connell, who has achieved so much as a coach at St. Patrick's Secondary School in Eton. Andy, couldn't they work the same magic one more time?
On balance, I still think this will be very hard. Not to deny David Rudisha's enormous talent, but I wonder, what toll have the injuries taken? Remember, this is not about a mass-level runner. This is the best of the best, and time marches on. And those world records in the 800 are now 10 years ago. Now, while running events are technical, there's also a big engine required. It's not quite the same as a footballer having a layoff, but still having the technical skills, working on them while they're injured and getting back into shape. And they still have that awareness of what happens on the pitch. In athletics, and let's take the 800, because we're looking at Rudisha in the 800, you have tactics, of course, plus coping with championship rounds up to two or three races to reach the final. And track and field has its own distinctive brutality of competition, and especially hard to go into a running event less than fully fit. In a throwing competition, you might get in one super throw, your body's strapped up, and that might, just might, be enough to beat the opposition. Another point is that while athletics fans want to see the best in action, so do the journalists who cover the sport, I think there is a danger of forgetting that time moves on and bodies don't stay the same. Now, I'm not saying this in particular about Rudisha, whom I've interviewed once or twice at European meetings, and I don't know well. But in my many years covering the sport, I've come across a number of performers, not necessarily the top stars, but those who nonetheless are good, solid international athletes. And they keep going, saying, oh, one more championship tilt, one more chance. I can't go out like this. I've not reached a final. I've got to come back next year. But I think deep down, I suspect it's because they don't have a plan for the next step in their lives, a life where they're not wearing a tracksuit. And if I can add somewhat tongue-in-cheek comment, sometimes journalists want those same top performers to remain in the spotlight because they associate them with their own youth.
Andy, Colm O'Connell, his longtime coach, has been quoted as saying that the postponement of the Tokyo Olympics to next year will help Rhodesia in terms of regaining top level. They've enjoyed such success up to now. Do you think this background will be a positive factor?
Definitely. So I'm not saying that this is a forlorn quest. It's worth pursuing, and us onlookers, observers, should, however, retain a sense of realism. Now, on the plus side, Colm O'Connell has been such an important guiding light in the development of so many Kenyan athletes, great ones. He coached a previous world record holder in the 800, Wilson Kipketer, who's Kenyan-born and also a pupil at St. Patrick's, but who ran for Denmark. It was Kipketer's record, which Rhodesia broke in Berlin in 2010. There are many more who have developed under Colm O'Connell's keen eye since he arrived at the school in 1976. We can think of marathon runners such as Mary Keitany, Edna Kiplagat, and then on the track, Peter Rono. I saw him win a surprise Olympic title in 1500 in Seoul in 1988, and the steeplechaser Brumin Kipruto. And that's barely starting to read out the school's honour board, and David Rhodesia is definitely on it. The impression which Rhodesia makes on the media is of a very level-headed individual, very much like Eliud Kipchoge in the marathon, a great sporting talent which he has developed to an awesome degree. Just look online at the London Olympic 2012 and the Olympic final, and he dominates that race from starting gun to finish line.
Andy, I suppose one of the key differences between Olympic and World Championship selection is that for the world's current champions can be invited by World Athletics, formerly the IAAF, to compete. That is, they don't have to go through their national trials. To make the Kenyan Olympic team, Andy, would David Rhodesia have to run the national trials just like any other contender for a place?
Yes, and the Kenyan trials, given the quality especially in their middle and long-distance talent, are brutal affairs. No respect of reputation and past achievements. Now, that said, David Rhodesia's achievements as one of the greatest ever 800-meter runners and the current world record holder speak for themselves. If he were never to run another step, he would still be one of the great ones.
Thanks, Andy. That's the energetic Andy Edwards speaking with us from London. And we'll hear more of Andy's athletic insights in the days to come.
Hello, sports fans. This is Paul Tergat, marathon champion from Kenya. You are listening to the Sony Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Thanks, David. That's our African Beat host, David Vandy. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Dan Friedel caught up with one of the top female sports journalists here in the USA, and the focus of their conversation was the Olympics. Here's Dan.
We're joined now on the Sunny Side of Sports by USA Today columnist Christine Brennan. Christine has covered the Olympics for many years. She and I were in the stadium in Beijing in 2008 for the opening ceremony. And that was quite a memory for the two of us to share. And we thought we would be getting ready for the 2020 Olympics in Tokyo. And it looks like it'll be moved out to 2021 if all things go according to plan. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports, Christine.
Well, Dan, it's great to be with you. Thanks so much. And yes, I will never forget sitting next to you during those extraordinary opening ceremonies, which of course was, I will never forget the date either, 08-08-08, August 8th in Beijing. And remember how, I know you do, it was midnight or one before we got out of there. And I remember how hot it was, how hot and humid and sticky it was at midnight. And the grime that was on everything, you know, just from the pollution in the air and on our skin. And it was an amazing thing. It was fun, but it was extraordinary, the level of heat, the intensity of the heat, even late into that evening, for sure.
And I'll always remember the jet-powered flags, yeah. Right? We were in the lower level of the stadium where there was no air circulation, yet the flags were blowing at full blast. That was an engineering feat by the Chinese organizing committee.
Absolutely. I know. I was thinking of that as I was talking, and then you said it. I love it.
Yeah, so, Christine, here we are 12 years later. I was planning to do a number of preview stories about the Olympics, getting a list together of potential athletes to interview. And here I have been talking to them, and they've been talking to me about what it's going to be like for them to kind of reset their schedule now that the coronavirus pandemic has pushed the Olympics back a year. You had an interesting story recently in USA Today about a batch of athletes who had their Olympic dreams interrupted. And these were the American athletes who were not able to attend the 1980 Olympics in Moscow because of the USA boycott. What were some of the stories that you encountered when you went back and looked at some of those athletes who had to put their career on hold 40 years ago?
It's really bitter for so many of them. They're all in their 50s or 60s now. They're successful people. They're living their lives, had kids, you know, marriages, divorces, you know, the whole great business success, good people. On the 12th, which will be Sunday, is the anniversary, the 40 years to that day that the U.S. Olympic Committee's House of Delegates, which was their governing body at the time, under intense pressure from President Jimmy Carter and his White House, voted not to participate. The U.S. Olympic Committee, now it's called the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee, but back then just the USOC, voted not to participate in the 1980 Summer Olympic Games in Moscow because of the Soviet invasion into Afghanistan. And I remember I was in college, and I remember hearing about this, and I love the Olympics. Even then, obviously, I'm still a student. I'm not yet covering them as my career. But I remember thinking, well, if Jimmy Carter says this, if our president says this, then they need to do this. And I even talked to a few of the athletes who said, yes, they felt if the country says we need to do this, we need to do it. Well, unfortunately, now, looking back on it, and even at the time, frankly, within a few months, it was futile, and it was such a mistake. And it wasn't just in the U.S., of course. It was 64 other nations. So 65 nations in all boycotted. And then the Soviets and their allies returned the favor in 84 with L.A. So you've got Olympics, and there was a 76 boycott of some African by the African nations. So you really have boycotted Olympics in 76 in Montreal, 80 in Moscow, and 84 in L.A. From 72 in Munich, which, of course, was tragic in its own way, and the terrible, terrible terrorist attack on 11 Israeli athletes and coaches, killing all of them. But from 72 all the way to 88, with Seoul was your first Olympics then that was really had everyone, the entire world was back. And of course, okay, so you say those things, right? And it's like, okay, well, yeah. But the human stories, the actual digging down and digging into some of the personal stories, it's we know what tragedy is right now, and sports is not tragedy, but it is a sports tragedy for these for some of these people. For example, there's a man named Craig Beardsley, and I've written about him in the past, so he's my go-to guy when I talk about the boycott. He set the world record in the 200-meter butterfly. He was a swimmer from New Jersey, and he set that world record 10 days after his Olympic race in Moscow went off without him, because, of course, there was a boycott, so he couldn't go. And he swam a second and a half faster than the Soviet swimmer who won that 1980 Olympic gold medal in Moscow. So second and a half is like a lifetime. It's like a, you know, it's a huge, huge gap in swimming. So here's Craig Beardsley, obviously the fastest swimmer in the world. And not only does he not even have an Olympic medal, but he doesn't get a chance to even go to the Olympics. So what does he do? He spends, and he's 19 at the time, he spends the next 4 years of his life, went to the University of Florida, and he's training. His whole focus is the next 4 years for the Olympic trials in 84 in Indianapolis, going for the L.A. Summer Olympic Games. I covered those trials. I was a young reporter at the Miami Herald, and I covered those 1984 Olympic swimming trials. And I remember hearing about this guy, Craig Beardsley, among many, by the way, who were trying to come back, who couldn't swim in 80 at the Olympics because of the boycott, deprived of it, and of course then are trying in 84. And this was really one of those heartbreaking moments that happened every night in the finals where some of these people were coming back and trying to make it, and Craig Beardsley was one of them. And sure enough, he gets back in the pool for the finals for the 200 men's butterfly, And back then, two made it. First place went to the Olympics. Second place went to the Olympics. Third place went home. And Craig Beardsley, then 23 years old, finished third, missing the U.S. team by 0.36 of a second, so one-third of a second. Touched out. He said, I was devastated. I looked at the scoreboard. I was stunned. I felt deflated. I was emotionless. At that point, I was done. And really sad to me, you know, of course, those L.A. games, I'm sure some of your listeners remember those Olympics. It was such a wonderful national moment. Everyone tuned in. People watched. I was there covering them. But, you know, it was just such a national experience, a shared experience. And Craig Beardsley and his family went on vacation in Hawaii, Dan.
They went to Hawaii, right.
Right.
That's so difficult to have to turn your back on something that you spent your whole life training for.
Well, yeah, and then he literally did not turn on the television at all. Didn't watch a second of it. Couldn't watch it. And as he said to me, he said, we were just pawns in a political game.
That's Christine Brennan, sports columnist for USA Today newspaper. And Christine was talking with Dan Friedel.
Hi, I'm Helen Morales, Olympic champion for Team USA, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Thanks, Heather. We look forward to your next Music Time in Africa show. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. My VOA colleague Gwen Uten joins us now with a report on mental health and athletes during the coronavirus epidemic. Hi, Gwen.
Hey there, Sonny. When American Olympian Simone Biles found out the Tokyo Games were postponed, she broke down and cried. The most decorated gymnast in history said it wasn't her physical health that worried her. She was concerned about the toll on her mental health. The coronavirus outbreak has shed light on the issue of mental health across the globe. In the United States, a recent survey showed over a third of respondents were feeling the negative effects of the pandemic, both mentally and psychologically. In the world of sports, professional athletes face the challenge of not only staying physically fit, but mentally fit as well. And they find themselves with a void to fill, with no competitions to focus on for the indefinite future. Jonas Bayer Hoffman is General Secretary for the World Soccer Players Union, FIFPro. He says there is an additional concern for athletes who are already prone to anxiety and depression.
Mental health is a huge consideration. I mean, we have, from studies over the last years anyways, we can see that there are elevated numbers in terms of risks for anxiety and different psychological problems of players compared to the general population. Probably because quite a high tense and precarious employment for most of them. And clearly these times make this worse.
The coronavirus pandemic has brought football league matches to a standstill, and top players in the biggest clubs have come under pressure to accept wage cuts to help manage costs during the stoppage. But Bayer Hoffman says young athletes who play in smaller leagues are also struggling to make ends meet.
What I think are some of the factors to take into account as well, we have many young individuals who are on their own away from their home countries. They have no family support oftentimes in these countries. Many of them have literally one-year employment contracts, meaning there's enormous distress about whether they have any kind of income coming the end of the season.
And Bayer Hoffman says women players are especially vulnerable and often have to deal with accommodations that are inferior to their male counterparts.
It is a huge concern, and I think it's also something where we have to look at women's football. We've had quite a few players who play abroad and who oftentimes, because they do so under lesser condition than most of the men who would travel to another country to pursue their career, they're oftentimes on their own. They don't travel with family. They don't have spouses or so sometimes with them, which means they're sitting in a foreign country in a small apartment that the club is providing with hardly any social interaction and no family support nearby. And that creates enormous pressure that we're trying to help them with. And where we're also in many cases are trying to lobby to allow these players, although it's not easy in these times, to travel home and be with their families simply because their well-being is more important than a potential return to practice maybe 2 or 3 days later, which I think in these current circumstances we all know is a long way away anyways.
In an article published by FIFPro entitled Keep Your Mind Sharp, the union reminds players to maintain a healthy lifestyle with adequate sleep and to stay connected with family and friends via social media. FIFPro also advises players to focus only on what they can control and to avoid watching too much news, in particular coverage on the coronavirus, to keep stress levels down. Not bad advice. And that is all from me for today and for the week. Sonny, back over to you. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
This is the Voice of America. Washington, D.C.
With the National Basketball Association season suspended and practice facilities shuttered because of the coronavirus pandemic, multiple all-star players are planning to pass the time by returning to a favorite childhood game, horse. Oklahoma City Thunder guard Chris Paul, Atlanta Hawks guard Trae Young, Utah Jazz guard Mike Conley, and Chicago Bulls guard Zach LaVine will participate in the competition, which will be televised by ESPN. The tournament will consist of three rounds. The first will be broadcast on Sunday, while the semifinals and the championship round will be held back-to-back on April 16th. Now, this is not the NBA's first foray into horse. Horse is a shooting game in which a player accrues a letter whenever he can't duplicate his opponent's made shot. With the first person to spell out H-O-R-S-E by failing to match the five shots losing. At its best, the horse platform will be a creative trick show and put on display some of the great creative moves by some of basketball's best players. In 2009 and 2010, horse was added to the official NBA All-Star Weekend slate. Oklahoma City Thunder star Kevin Durant, now with the Brooklyn Nets, won the competition both of those years. And that wraps up the April 10th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Have a good weekend, everyone. And that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
VOA's Our Voices television program is about more than just sitting and talking about women's issues.
It's about listening to them
and bringing their opinions to the table and making sure that their voices are heard. Because our lived experiences, our stories, and our voices will help shape the next generation.
Check your local TV listings and join the conversation each week with Our Voices on VOA.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
The Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 1705 UTC on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.